Welcome back to another episode of Hot Pizza Ass. I'm your host, Erin Darling Turalva. On today's episode, I have Alex Hooper, who's a comedian that you guys have seen on Roast Battle, but also, most recently, on the past season of America's Got Talent, which was filmed in a pandemic. Yes, we talk about what it's like filming on a show like that without an audience. That's pretty rough for a comedian. But we talk a lot about pivoting in general and changing the way that you approach things when it comes to life, when it comes to comedy, and when it comes to finding your own voice and style as a performer. It's a really fascinating conversation, and I think you guys are going to love it. Before we get into this episode, I want to take a moment to read a review. This is from Hoop Sauce, who left a review on iTunes podcast, and it says, "Erin is a stellar host, blending comedy and motivation on difficult topics. This gives you all the feels and will leave you wanting more from each guest." Thank you so much, Hoop Sauce. I appreciate that. As you guys know, this is Thanksgiving week. It's a really important week for me personally, probably my favorite holiday of the year. And I think it's important for me to take a second to acknowledge all the reviews that you guys have left and to really thank you from the bottom of my heart, especially to everyone that supports on Patreon. If you guys want to leave a review, it would make my day. This is how we grow. It is the most simple, quick, and free way to support the podcast. Head over to iTunes right now, leave me a review, and I just might read yours on the next episode of Hot Pizza Ass. Without further ado, here's Alex Hooper. You've had a big year when a lot of people have had years where their lives get increasingly smaller.
Yeah, it's a weird paradox kind of to deal with, of like being that I was on national TV multiple times, but I couldn't do any other stand-up whatsoever. So I'm going on America's Got Talent, and I without it practicing at all, live television, just hoping for the best. I got engaged in January because my foresight is incredible. I've really been trying to like make this year, to not make excuses for this year. You know, everyone had their plans shifted and we all had to adapt. And I write that in my journal entries, like every single day. It's just like, pivot, do not be afraid to grow and change. And there is no certainty. There never was. Stop pretending. So just trying to, you know, I'm trying to have a good attitude about this, instead of just being like, God, this shit stained stupid fucking year is ruining everything. Because honestly, like, I just don't think that's going to get us anywhere. We got to figure out how to make it better, not how to complain about what we're existing in.
Yeah, definitely. There are for sure challenges that come along with this year. But I think part of the challenge, besides just like surviving, is like you said, trying to figure out how to adapt, you know, like, I have a podcast, which is cool, because if I didn't have the podcast, I don't really know what my outlet would have been this year.
Yeah, I actually I stopped my podcast because I was recording in a small studio, and I stopped it for a few months and I really missed it. And it just became like, instead of like, I did a lot of Zoom shows, but mostly I just kind of use this as a forced slowdown, just because for the last 10 years, I feel like I've just been gunning it at 100 miles per hour every single day. And then this happened and I was like, oh, so I can just go to the park and read a book and take a long walk and listen to music. You know, I exercise. I started playing tennis. I'll write every day. I'll meditate more. Like, I really started using this year to be like, hey, you don't have to go so hard right now. What can you do for yourself mentally and physically so you come out of this a better person? And I'm fortunate that I've had the time and the resources to be able to focus on that, because I know for a lot of people, it's not that simple. You know, there's finances involved and things like that. I was a very good squirrel for a few years. I saved all the money that I could. So when this happened, I didn't freak out as much as I was like, I'll be okay. So now who am I without comedy? Like, what am I without comedy? Because that's literally the way I've defined myself for so many years.
Yeah, for sure. That kind of brings me to where I wanted to start things off with you, because I'm always fascinated in finding out how comics like found their voice, found their thing, found their style. And you have a very, very distinct one. And I'm curious, How did you get to that point, really embracing that and really discovering, okay, this is me, this is what I'm going to do?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, when you first start out in any sort of artistic endeavor, you really don't know what you're doing or what you want to be. You're just emulating styles and experimenting with different mediums and things like that. And as time went on, in my comedy career, I got really into music festivals and live concerts and just the whole just kind of transformational world of just like, hey, for like 3 days, for a long weekend, we get to go express ourselves however we want. We get to be whoever we want. We get to dress however we want. We get to play in any way that we want. And the more I started going to these festivals, and I'd go to like, started with like two or three, then it eventually was like six or seven a year, I started just being inspired by what I saw and the way people presented themselves. So I started getting more into the pageantry of it and the outlandish costumes and the sequins and rainbow furs and all that other stuff. It's just so fun. But I always thought like, okay, this is a separate part of my life. I have my festival life and I have my comedian life, because I can't merge the two. There's no way people will take me seriously if I'm standing on stage in a unitard. That's just not going to work. They're just going to think I'm a buffoon. And what I realized over the years is I started slowly integrating it, like into when I was doing roast battle, I would start coming in these crazy outfits and characters. And I slowly realized that the only thing holding me back from going on stage in what I consider my truest form was myself and my own hangups and hesitations about what people would think. But when I started embracing it and really like letting my style come out on stage, what I realized is people actually trusted me more. They looked at me as a more authentic person, a more genuine person. And even though they're looking at me going, well, I'm not going to wear that shit, I'm still going to listen to this person because obviously he knows who he is, or at least somewhat of a direction that I want to go. So it really like, it's a long, slow build. So people that only see me on like America's Got Talent, they're like, that guy's a freak. It's like, hang on. It took me a while to get there. So don't just discount it that quickly.
Oh, for sure. That's the thing that fascinates me about that. Cause like, I know like no one starts there. I know you didn't start there. Like I know like everyone doesn't automatically start in that place where they're like really accepting the thing that they think that they are. And then when they become that thing, it like something amazing happens. It like changes their life. So I think
you start to believe in yourself, right? You start to realize how, because when you met me, I was a t-shirt and jeans comic, you know, wearing like tennis shoes on stage and just like, I wouldn't look like shit, but I wouldn't look like I put anything together to be a performer. And now I feel like I have found like this real like ultimate version of myself that I'm growing into. And it's just my writing got better, my bits got better, my presence got better, just because suddenly I think started to believe in myself a little bit more.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that LA too, like especially Comedy Store, I feel like LA comics are very like one note. And I don't mean this is like a burn on anyone or anything, but I remember I would a lot of the times even feel like kind of uncomfortable in certain rooms because I'd be like, oh, anyone that brings energy into this room stands out, and not necessarily like it's hard to think that, oh, I could stand out in a good way if I'm positive or fun or bright. Anyone that kind of differentiates themselves in a way that's more bright, I feel like is always a risk. And I always wondered why, because I'm like, as comics, I know we all get into this because like we want to be expressive and we want to be ourselves and we have thoughts and opinions and we want to share them with the world, you know. But at the same time, there is kind of a culture that doesn't necessarily automatically support those that like want to be different.
Oh, definitely. I mean, you really are going out on a limb. And like you said, it's taking a risk. But what I find is the bigger risk I take, yes, there's a much bigger chance that I will fall flat on my ass, but there's also a chance that the reward is going to be so much higher because I did something original and really went for it. And I think, you know, I love being dark on stage. I have some evilness brewing inside of me that's like left over from when I was younger. But I love doing that stuff because I undercut it with the fact that people know I'm just this silly little happy weirdo. So I'm up there wearing like super fun clothing, but I'm talking about really, like, you know, dark themes sometimes. But I feel like I can get away with it because people know that it's coming from a place of love and there's no anger or bitterness thrown into it.
Yeah, for sure. Do people ever accuse you of having a gimmick? Is that something you've ever encountered? What do you say? Yeah.
I don't really feel the need to answer that question so much, like, because if somebody just said, oh, he's just doing, like, somebody once said, I do it to make up for my lack of writing. And I was just like, you've clearly never watched me on stage, because I am so punchline heavy in every single one of my bits that it's just a matter of, they're kind of afraid. Like, when I started doing it at Roast Battle, a lot of roasters were pissed at me because they were like, this isn't fair, Alex. We're going on stage and then you come out with these elaborate costumes. And how are we supposed to compete against that? And I was like, hi, this is a show and I'm making the show more entertaining. If you can't deal with that, then that's your own issue. So anyone who says to me, they're just like, oh, you only do that because you want to like be something that you're not, or you just want to have shock value. Those people are insecure with themselves and they're trying to figure out who they are. And to see someone who has found the level of freedom that I myself have found, and believe me, I'm still very much coming into my own. Like, I'm not fully there yet, and I'm not sure I ever will be, to be honest. But I know what I want to be and where I want to go. And when you have definitive purpose, you really can't be stopped. And anything that somebody says to you that's negative, it's just so easy just to let it hit me, slide down, and just fall to the floor.
I like how nice you are to your haters. Like, when you screen cap, like, responses to comments and stuff that people say, I can't think of any off the top of my head, but, like, I feel like you're very, like, positive and you, like, check in with people that say negative things about you on social. And I think that's a really cool way of handling it, because I know I'm not that way. I can get kind of feisty and I just want to throw someone under the bus, you know, but, like, that's not you.
No, but it was me. That's the thing, is like, when people, I remember when I first started reading internet comments, which I know is a huge mistake and I still do it anyway, because for the most part, I've learned how to sift through and not let the negative ones hit me. But at the same time, all they want when they say you're the worst comic I've ever seen is for you to go, fuck you, you don't know me, meh. That's what they want. So instead, if they say something like that and I go, are you okay today? Is there something I can help you with? Instead of reaching out to a stranger and telling them why you don't like them, what if you put the same energy into loving your family and your friends? Don't you think they would appreciate you? And I respond like that, and then they don't know what to do. Some people admit that they're like, I'm sorry, dude, I was having a bad day. You're exactly right. I'm so sorry about that. Other people they block me because that's not the response they wanted at all.
And you scare them, you freak them out.
Yeah. And I just think it's such a more fun way to handle a troll on the internet is to shower them with love and affection instead of playing their own game. And the fact is, I'm the ultimate troll. Like, what I do on, not online at all, but like what I do on America's Got Talent is one of the highest levels of trolling that you can possibly do. I'm trolling an entire audience that's like huge. I'm trolling a show and they're just sitting behind a computer at home being like, oh, you think you're so great. Well, I think you suck. And I'm just like, I don't care. Like, anyone who's writing stuff like that, you're not going to be my fan anyway. So I don't need to take the time to give you that sort of adoration.
Yeah, I'm a big believer in that. Like, putting your energy toward things that that have the potential to kind of like pay off instead of wasting it on people that are really just, they're not going to do anything for you.
Right. And honestly, and that comes back to the definitive purpose is just like, if you know what you want to accomplish, these people can't stand in your way by telling me not to do something or that I'm terrible. I mean, the fact is, almost everything huge that I've ever done in my career would, if you told anyone else to do it, they'd be like, that's the worst idea I've ever heard. Like, that's never going to work. And the fact is, if you believe in it and you put the work towards it, you can make anything work. You can be this silly ass person that does these, you know, weird feats in comedy and just hope for the best, really.
For sure. Speaking of trolling, I loved how, was it the finals of AGT when you did the roast book?
Yeah, it was the live show. So I didn't make it all the way to the finals. I was a quarterfinalist this year. So I got top 25, which was insane for me to get that far. But yeah, it was the roast book, people have asked how I came up with it. Originally, because of COVID, I had to give them all of these contingency plans in case I couldn't go back to the studio or the theater to shoot. So they were like, just so you know, we might have to shoot from your own home. And I was like, what?
What?
It's going to be awful. They were like, yeah, maybe through Zoom. And I was like, that's going to be the worst for everybody. So I started coming up with all these plans of like, well, what could I do that's more creative? And one of the plans I sent them was me sitting in bed reading a bedtime story of all these roast jokes. So when we came time to film again and they were like, there's not going to be an audience, but you are going to be on a stage. I just thought like, I've watched every comedian die this season because there's no audience. And even if their material's great, it doesn't seem great because people aren't laughing. So what's a way where I can get away with this act and not have it be reliant on audience interaction? And that's when I came up with the burn book of just doing all these nursery rhymes, because it didn't matter if people were laughing or not. I would be okay performing it and I'd be able to stay in a rhythm without needing the audience to give me feedback.
Yeah, I love how you just went for it and how risky that is because, you know, you're like roasting the judges.
Yeah.
And that's pretty ballsy, you know, to like really just go for it. What made you think like, were you ever like kind of on the fence about like, maybe I shouldn't be pissing the judges off right now? Or were you kind of like, nope, I'm doing it?
No, because I mean, in my initial, like when I did it in 2018, which is the clip that went super viral, that one has like over almost 80 million views overall. I got recruited by America's Got Talent to do exactly that. Like they wanted someone to come in and roast the judges. And I was like, if I'm going to do it, I want to do it my way. And I showed them this character that I had done on Roast Battle on Comedy Central. And they were like, oh, this is fun. Yeah, let's do this. Like, I can't just be an angry white guy making fun of iconic celebrities. Like these people are heroes to a lot of the population. And so I need a way to make it more satire and court jester-esque. So when I did it in 2018 and got booed off the stage and it was just such an intense performance, you know, a couple years went by and then I thought, what if I just did it again? And I just hit up the show's producers and told them I want to come back and apologize and then just ransack them all over. And the producers were like, 100%, come back and do it again. And this time, they understood what I was doing a little bit more and they allowed me to really like have my moment and thrive, and they were welcoming the jabs instead of being like, we don't want this anymore, we're angry at you, playing their little characters, you know. So it this season, because of COVID and everything, it made me so much more creative and think so much bigger. And like having the illustrations pop up behind me of the jokes, I mean, all of these things, just everything kind of came together in this massive way. And that's what I kind of encourage. So many people tell me they want to go on America's Got Talent. What's my piece of advice? You got to do something memorable. You got to go bigger than your regular stand-up routine. And so whatever that means to you, whether it means, you know, wear more fun, be a more fun outfits, bigger act outs, whatever you can do to separate yourself from the pack, you got to do something. Because America's Got Talent, a show like that, you either need to kill or you need to bomb. If you're anywhere in the middle, they have zero use for you.
No, that's so smart. I love that. So let's talk about your whole journey with the show. Like, where did it start? Just walk me through this whole story.
Yeah, so I mean, I really, like, they came, they asked about five Roast Battle people to come and audition. So we didn't have to wait in the line or anything. They gave us passes to skip the queue and all that, which is huge. Because I remember I auditioned in, like, maybe like 2011 when I was 2 years into comedy, and it was like a 7 hour experience to wait in line. They watched me do comedy for maybe 14 seconds and were like, thank you, bye. And I was like, I'm never doing this again. This is horrible. Why would anyone subject themselves to this? But when they ask for you and they kind of give you a little carte blanche to like do what you want to do, then it's a little bit of an easier experience. So like I went on the show the first time thinking this is probably not going to go well, but as long as I don't break character, I'll be fine. They're not going to destroy me in the edit. Because that's one thing. I had a former producer, a friend of mine, reach out and was like, Alex, don't do this. It's not good for you. And I was like, why? They're like, because they can edit you any way they want. And it doesn't matter how well you do, they can make you look terrible. And they will if they choose to. And I was like, well, if I don't break character up there, if I just be this kind of like freakazoid, roasty, asshole, beast thing, then I can just be like, oh, I was just doing a character. I was just trolling the show. I was supposed to bomb. That's how it was supposed to go. And then I started thinking positively. The week before, my girlfriend was like, you don't think like this. Why do you think it's not going to go well? I've never heard you talk like this in your life. You go on stage and you make people happy. Why don't you think that's going to happen? And I was like, yeah, you're right. They are going to like it. Howie Mandel's going to get it. And they're all going to start laughing. 3,000 people in the audience. Of course, that's not what happened at all. As soon as I told my first joke, the vitriol from the audience was very apparent. They hated my guts and they let me know screaming as loud as they could how much they hated me. And when I walked off that stage, it was such a terrible feeling. I mean, like literally, like, you know, when you like eating bad food or you haven't exercised and you feel sick and there's this weird negativity just like that's kind of oozing through your body and you just don't feel right. Mm-hmm. That's what I had for like a couple of days where I was just like, I did something wrong. Like I did something really bad. This is not good. How are they going to air this? Are they going to air it? Are they going to air it as worst comedian ever thinks he's sucking somebody? Like I was like thinking like I've ruined whatever I've already built here. And then when it aired, they released it. First of all, it looked great. They edited it in a way that was very flattering towards me. And then they released the clip on YouTube as professional roaster Alex Hooper insults the judges panel. And I was like, whoa, that's a huge piece of respect. Like they just gave me a title, professional roaster. So all of a sudden it was like, you know, YouTube clip went crazy. I started getting more bookings. It turned me into a headliner. And then when it came time to come back this season, when I hit him up and found out I was going to do it again, I was all in. And I was like, this season, I'm going to make the finals. Here we go. Everyone's going to get it because they're going to get it. Then I shot my audition on March 14th.
Oh, literally. Wow.
So no audience. Almost no backstage crew. The temperament backstage. Normally at America's Got Talent, it is a circus backstage. There's like, you know, little kid dance troops that are practicing their numbers. There's some guy juggling human bones. There's some woman doing opera in the corner. Like it's a shit show of weirdos. But this, it was silent back there. Nobody was talking. Everyone was nervous because there was just like no audience out there. People were like, what are we going to do? And I was with a couple of the comedians, Sam Brillhart and John Hastings, and they were like, guys, this sucks. And I was like, no, we are LA comedians. If anyone knows how to do comedy for three people, it's us. This sucks for everyone else. We know three people in an audience. So I just kind of looked at it like that of like, look, I'm in that same theater. It's empty. It's quiet as can be. And I'm looking at Howie Mandel, Sofia Vergara, and Simon Cowell, hoping that they are okay with me slicing the shit out of them on that stage. And thank God they were. made it through that round. Then I went on to the judges' cuts, and where they decided I wasn't even going to perform. They just put me right through to the live shows. And that's when it really started to get crazy, because it was like every single day, you know, this started in May, knowing that I was going to go through. So every single day was emails back and forth with producers of like, what are we going to do? How are we going to perform this? What can we put on the table to make this more enticing for everybody? How do I not look like a jerk up there if I have to do this from home or something? And it just, because of that, and because I had so much time because of quarantine, because I wasn't working, I had all the time in the world just to think about this and be like, this is a moment. How can I capture this to the best of my ability when I haven't performed? I haven't tested these jokes. I'm on a giant stage shooting live television. I mean, I was like backstage, like I was just meditating the fuck out of every moment I could, just to calm myself down and not think about the fact that this is so many people that are about to watch me do this in real time, and I can't screw it up. And I remember there was a moment when I was on the throne and I was reading the book, and I just thought, wow, Alex, do you know how many people are watching this right now? You're doing it, man. You're actually killing it right now. You're hitting every single moment. And I had to be like, hey, Brave, can I be in the moment a little bit right now? Can I get back to what I'm doing and focus on this and not think about all the external things? And my stand-up brain just kind of kicked in of like, I know where to go from each moment. And it just, you know, and I made it so far in the show. I didn't get voted through, but that's not crazy at all, because on that show, I'm not wanted really by the audience. There's select people that like me, but I'm not what that show is looking for.
I think it's hard for comics in general on that show, because competing against someone like a dog that's doing tricks and like freaking, yeah. You know,
I mean, to give
singers.
You an idea, the people that beat me in that like I was up against for a voting round, the people that beat me were two former cops who played acoustic cover songs. I was like, I can't beat two cops playing U2. I just can't, because the people at home are like, oh, I know this song, I still haven't found, and they just get into it because it's familiar. And then I come out wearing a onesie and a fur coat, just dishing out all this service to the judges of just like bringing them down. And while some people really like it, a very niche part of the audience, for the most part, people are like, I don't know what this is. This is unpredictable. Not for me. And also, AGT fans, they're not comedy fans overall. They're not the people that go to comedy clubs on the weekend. To see someone do something that is almost scary to them because of like, I got messages of like, my kids watch that show. Do you know what kind of terrible example you are? And it's just like, well, you need to be a better parent than if you think I'm a terrible example for your kids. Like, that's not my issue. But then, you know, but then I get other people who do get it. I had one woman that sent me a message that said her 9-year-old son started crying when they kicked me off the show, you know? And I get messages like that too, where there is a very small select group of those fans that are super into what I do. And really that's all I'm looking for anyway. I'm not trying to convert people that would never like me. I'm trying to be like, hey, if you like what I do here, you'll probably like what I do elsewhere in the comedy world.
Yeah. And I think that it's important for people to see different types of performers just in general, like on big platforms like that, because like that kid that cried probably like saw himself like in you, you know, like you are a representation of something that they now see as possible. And I think that's like when people really start connecting to what you're doing. And that's why there's so much importance, I think, on being different and on like having a unique thing about you, because you never know who's watching this being like, oh my God, I kind of want to do that. Or, oh, if they can do it, maybe I can, you know, like you're inspiring people.
Yeah. And one of the coolest parts about it is it's given me, because of Roast Battle and Comedy Central, because of AGT, I have so many fans that are young, like below 18 and stuff. And I had one guy send me a message that just said, bro, the world isn't ready for you right now, but my generation is. And to get a message like that, it's so motivating for me to keep doing what I'm doing and knowing that there are young people out there that are watching that and going like, whoa, like you can do that? Well, cool. Then what else is possible out there? And I never set out to be inspirational in any way, but when I started living a very truthful existence and really started playing to the colorful, happy side of me, it just kind of was a happy accident almost that people started kind of realizing that my way of life was fun and silly and I value love over everything. And if you come at that place, it's obvious to people and they can see it and then they want to support you. And I found that so many people, when it came time to vote for AGT in the live shows, the amount of people that stepped up for me was baffling. Like, I mean, it was like, I felt like every person I'd ever met in the comedy world posted about me that day and about how happy they were to see me doing it. And those are the moments when you realize like, you're doing something right and that you've made the right people and you've done things the right way. And it was so incredibly wonderful to have that support behind me. And I'll never forget, I was in the dressing room 2 hours before shooting the live show and Jeff Ross called me to just, check in with me. And he was like, who's there with you? And I was like, nobody is. And no one's allowed to be here because of COVID. I'm by myself. And he was just like, dude, I don't know what that's like, because you're supposed to have people there with you when you shoot a huge moment like this, mm-hmm. but just know that even though you're alone, we are all there with you right now. We're all a part of you and we're all going to be there on that stage in some way. And when he said that to me, like, I felt that. I really did. And it was something that I just needed to hear right before shooting. And then the other thing that really helped me was 20 minutes before I went on stage, the show is happening. It's live. I'm sitting backstage listening to it. I get a text from my dad that just says, do you know how much I love you to make me sit through this bullshit? And I was like, Dad, yes, I do know how much you love me to make you sit through a terrible show like this. So that kind of gave me the extra fire in my belly to be like, oh yeah, my dad has to watch a show that he would never, ever watch. And that's bringing me my own sort of amusement.
That's awesome. That's so cool. I love that. And congratulations on all of that and the success of the journey. I'm really glad that you had that opportunity. I was inspired by it. And I also sent you a message letting you know how proud I was of you. Yeah, because it's just so cool to see someone like really fearlessly going for it. But let's talk about your special / documentary that's coming out. By the time this podcast drops, it'll be out for a couple of days. Let's get into it. Tell me all about, when did you actually film this?
November of last year.
Good timing.
Yeah, really. So basically I went to London to do a bunch of shows. A couple friends came with me. One of them is a filmmaker and he basically just wanted to document the entire experience. And the idea was we were going to shoot, like put together like a 7 to 10 minute little tour documentary as a proof of concept to shoot a much bigger special this year. But obviously all those plans got derailed. So he was like, look, I have a lot of footage here. Let me see what I can put together from this. And what he came at me with was this beautiful kind of blended travelogue, comedy special, tour documentary that is such an original style to present a comedy special. Basically, like, you know, if you ever watched a band's tour documentary, when you see them on stage and they start playing the song, you keep hearing the song, but now you're watching footage of them in a tour bus and backstage, signing autographs, like partying, whatever, but you're still listening to the same song you started with. So that's how he approached this. So you see me on stage telling a joke for a few seconds, but then the footage cuts to me like running around London, doing all these antics, like seeing the sights, eating delicious food, just kind of like having that travel experience, but you're still listening to me tell these jokes. And over the course of 5 days, I did 12 shows. So you'll see like little bits and pieces from like a bunch of different stages and different crowds. And what he put together is just, it moves really well. It's a really original style. And I had a major, I tried to sell it to a major company, and they didn't buy it, but they were like, I'll let you know, this is a perfect extension of who you are, which made me feel so good. And that, and they actually tweeted about it. That company actually tweeted it out today. So even though they didn't buy it, they tweeted about how good it was, which made me feel, you know, just like $1 million. So I'm so happy with how this turned out. And it's 27 minutes. It's not long. It moves really well. And the way I knew it was something special is I watched it and I didn't hate watching myself.
That's like such, you know, a comedian what I mean? Thing to say. Yeah.
It is, but yeah. I mean, you know how it is. Like you know how it is. Like if you ever listen to an episode of your podcast, you hear these intricacies that you pick up in your own voice that no one would ever pick up. But you're like, oh, I just said okay 4 times in a sentence. Like, you know. And I hear all that, but I still watch this, going like, whoa, like this is good. Yeah. And we showed it to like 3 people whose opinion we really trusted, and all of them were like, this is really good. Like, this is more interesting and entertaining than a lot of comedy specials that are coming out right now, solely because you're not just watching me on a stage against a blue wall tell these jokes for an hour. Instead, you're just watching bits and pieces of a guy traveling to another country for the first time and figuring it out. And so I think people are really going to latch on when they see it. I think most people are going to like actually watch the whole thing, which as a comedy special goal, like that's all you really want. Cause most, it's really hard these days to get people's attention. But I think with this, it's going to be hard to turn off. At least that's what I'm hoping for anyway.
That's so cool. I can't wait to check it out, and I'll put it in the show notes so anyone that's listening and wants to check it out can do the same. When someone likes you enough to like be interested in watching your special, like they like you, they want to know what you're doing and like what else is happening, and you as a person are entertaining. And I think there's like value in all aspects of that, and not just the actual performance. And that's cool that you guys got to capture all of that. And you have a great friend that was able to put this whole thing together.
Aaron, you have no idea. Like we'd be running around the city and we'd be like, you know, standing on a bridge, and I'd be like, all right, let's go. He's like, hang on, I need 8 minutes. And I'm like, why? He's like, I'm doing a time lapse right now. And I was like, you and your goddamn time lapses. Like we have a city to experience. Let's go. And then of course I watched this thing and I'm like, oh, I'm really glad you got all those time lapses and stuff. I'm glad. I kept telling him, I was like, God, just stop filming for 5 seconds. Like, he's like, shut up, just don't pay attention to it. And now, I mean, the amount of work he put into this, when he first showed it to me, it was 55 minutes. And there were very long periods of making stand up, like sometimes like 6-8 minutes in a clip without really moving. Cause it's not like we had multiple cameras coming with us. Everything is basically on one camera. So I was like, this is too much. Like, it's going to be really hard to sell this to people and to get people to watch it. And then as he condensed it more and more and more, it just became so much better. And it just, his efforts, his name's Kyle Troxel, he's amazing. He just put, the amount of love that he put into this thing is so obvious. He made all original music for it. He did all the editing for it. He put everything, like all the motion graphics done by him. He did everything, and did it solely out of the love of just wanting to put something out there that the two of us could then have as a proof of concept to really be like, look, we did this with zero plan and with nothing, with no money. Think about what we could do with the budget, you know? Like, and so this is going to be our selling point for projects for years to come, is like, well, look at this. And I really hope, again, I hope it kind of motivates comedians to think differently about how they're going to put stuff out in the future as well. Like, there's nothing wrong with the classic model of I'm on a stage and I'm going to do stand-up for an hour. But also, if you're not really well known like myself, you have to do something different to really get people behind it.
Yeah. And I think that's a great idea. Really. That's so cool. So what's next? Like, what are you going to do now? I mean, we're promoting the special slash doc and AGP is done. Like, what is going to happen next?
I mean, all my tour days are being canceled or moved. You know, right now, like, live shows are really not a thing. I do have, I have another idea for what my next piece, like, to follow this one up will be. And now that we know kind of how this works and we know what we're looking for about what we're going to put together, I think we could do it with a very small budget again and put something else out there. And again, I'm thinking, like, as much as I love doing an hour, and I do. I was ready to record an album in April. I had my plane tickets booked. I had the theater booked. I had the record label on board to record my second album. And now I'm realizing, like, while it is great to do an hour, digestible clips are really the best currency you can have right now on social media and YouTube. So I think, like, if I do another thing, I have, like, this 20-minute-ish project that I think will go really well that is me doing stand-up, but in a very unique way. I don't want to give too much away, although I will say I'm not scared because nobody could possibly steal this idea from me. it has to do with me slacklining. So I don't think any other, do you know what slacklining is?
No, what is that?
It's like tightrope walking. Like, if you ever see somebody, like, in a park or on a beach, they'll have a 1-inch piece of webbing tied between two trees. And, like, I walk on it, I dance on it, I bounce on it and stuff like that. And so my idea, it has to do with merging my comedy world with my slackline world. Wow. And I know no one's going to take this idea.
Yeah, no.
I don't think anyone else could do it. I want to keep doing things where I take two of my favorite things and I put them together. You know, that's what happened with what I used to do with Crave, the comedy warehouse parties I used to run. That's what I did with Pug Yoga, my calendar that I made. I just keep taking things that I'm good at and I enjoy and finding ways to mix them in a way that's never been done before. And I think the reason these things do well is because I'm so passionate about them and because I'm doing things that really haven't been done before, at least not in this way.
Yeah, right on. I can't wait to see that one too. What advice would you give, like, a younger stand-up, or maybe someone that's like, I want to do AGT. How does someone get on that show? Like, what would you tell them?
Be 100% yourself is the most important thing. One thing that happens with, especially a show like America's Got Talent, is sometimes I've heard they'll be like, yeah, you don't really have enough of a backstory. Let's kind of give you a little bit more, you know, maybe did you ever live in your car? Ooh, we could really sell that if you lived in your car, you know, stuff. So don't let them change who you are. Know what you want to go for and know why you're on a show like that. And especially to a younger comedian, like, just take your time and be patient with everything, because it's going to take so much longer than you think it will. And honestly, it should take a long time. People shouldn't be famous after doing stand-up for 3 years. They just shouldn't, because they don't even know who they are yet, probably. Mm-hmm. I think about where I was, like, even just 5 years ago. And if I showed myself 5 years ago what the things I've done, like America's Got Talent, and I showed them what I did, me 5 years ago would go, what the fuck happened over these few years that this is what I became? I wouldn't understand. I would have more questions than anybody. But just be, you know, frivolously yourself and learn who you are, and don't be afraid to explore deep inside and try new hobbies and try different ways of doing things, and just be kind to everyone you meet. You know, that's always so important, but really just find your purpose. That's it. I know my purpose is to spread love and have fun. I always want people to leave in a better mood than when they came in. That's what I want people to do. So everything I do in my life, I think, how can I have fun while making people happy and letting them know that I'm like this beacon of light and hopefully shining upon them, and so they can shine back toward me. It's just going to take a long time. And don't be afraid of the work. Like, do the work to discover who you are. You know, whether that means writing every day, meditating, taking psychedelics, like going on a trip by yourself, whatever it may be, there's so many ways to discover yourself. And I think it's such an important thing to do the work to realize how you relate to the world, and especially as a comedian, how you want to present yourself up there. That's our time. You know, however many minutes we have on that stage, that's our time to say, these are my thoughts, these are my ideals, this is what I believe in, and here's why I want you to know. Here's why it was worth paying to see me. Mm-hmm. You know, and if you always give that reverence to the audience and to yourself, I really just feel like you can't lose in the long game.
Yeah, I think that that's so right. And I think that, like, life is always happening, even when you're in pursuit of a goal. And I remember, like a long time ago when I started comedy and stuff like that, I would be so attached to the goal that, like, I couldn't really enjoy the life that was happening around me, or, you know, everything seemed not as important. But that's not true. Like, everything's important. Every day is important. Like, the experiences that you have outside of comedy feed your comedy. You know, yes. You never know what you're going to write about next, you know, or what you're going to become. Like you said, like, everything is a journey. And I think it's important, especially for comics and writers, to recognize that life is just part of the creative process, and don't be afraid of that.
Certainly. And also be open to change. Whatever you think you're going to succeed, like, if you have, like, a singular goal and you're like, I know this is my path, I guarantee you, you're going to stray from that path. Like, you know, I moved out here to be an actor, and I just thought, like, okay, I'll get a job on a sitcom probably in the first, like, 4 years. And then just off I go to permanent success land. And the things I've done, it's just, I've been constantly pivoting and getting off the path and taking a huge inner, like, section into the woods for a while, and climbing up a tree, and I can't even see where the path is anymore, and now I'm, like, looking for where I even started. But just be able to grow and to change within yourself and adapt with the times. I think that's just so important, to not be stubborn, which is honestly one of my biggest things in life, is I am a stubborn fuck and I can't get out of my own head sometimes, but I've gotten better about it just by, you know, reading personal development books and, you know, taking time for myself.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Alex. I can't wait to drop this episode. And congratulations on everything you've been able to do this year, even with the current societal limitations. You've done a lot.
Yeah, I mean, we've all had a mother of a year, and hopefully we are on the path to just get better. But just love everybody that you can, and check in with your friends and family, and just know that, like, we're not on pause. Keep going, everybody. Keep going. Realize your goals.
Keep going. Love everybody that you can, and continue on your path of realizing your goals. I think that was such a great place to end that episode. Thank you so much, Alex, for joining us. And thank you, everyone, for listening. Again, if you want to take a second to review the podcast, that would be incredible. Feel free to also check us out on Patreon, patreon.com/Erin Darling, for bonuses every single month. I have cool things dropping there within that community. Thank you guys so much for supporting along the way. I appreciate you a lot this week specifically because it's Thanksgiving, but really every week. Stay safe, stay happy. I will see you guys next time.